Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
It's the Mitchin Podcast.
Hey, what's up? And welcome to another fantastic episode of the Mitchin, Sydney's greatest and most formidable food podcast, featuring two lovely hosts. My name's Andrew Levins. My co-host, as always, Mitchell Orr.
Hi, Levs.
G'day, mate. And returning, as per popular demand, the most requested returning guest, Michael Eggert from Pinbone is back.
I get three requests.
It's that the means, same person yeah, every same time. Yeah, yeah. And I'm pretty sure I tell them to fuck off every time, too.
Shouts to Sam from Old Mate Wine in Perth. He loves Mike.
He's very good. It's the OG Mitch and it's the OGM, mate. We're killing it. This is for you, Sammy. We're going to just talk trash on Perth.
Yeah, we'll do the classic Mitchin. We'll do shitting on Perth, shitting on craft beer.
Yep.
And
whinging about stuff.
And six guests.
Yeah, definitely. We can do multiple voice.
Today on the show, we're going to talk about getting bollocked in the kitchen because an article came out last week in Good Food. We can talk about plus the new Josephine Pignolet Young Chef nominations. But before we get that, it's a very important story. Mike, then I'm glad that actually both of you. I'm glad Mitch brought it to my attention, and Mike, I'm glad you're here to talk about it. Justin Bieber, your thoughts?
Ah, fuck! I forgot about this.
I don't have many. I know he goes really well at music festivals, and that's about all I know.
So Justin Bieber, pop megastar, is holidaying in Australia. Mm-hmm. Or was in the last week.
Mm-hmm. Do you know why he was here?
Why was he here for like a
Hillsong conference? Hillsong, yeah.
Actually, I was writing a pizza story a couple of years ago and I had to eat at that Happy as Larry pizza truck, yeah, which is really fucking good. Yeah. It's a great truck. But the only way I could eat it was that they were posted up for like a full week at the Hillsong conference.
That's kind of a good business model.
Yeah, and I was there the same day that Bieber was there, but I didn't get to see him. Right. Anyway, he was back for religious reasons / holiday, yeah, according to the Telegraph. And guess where he ended up? Because they're in Homebush for this big Hillsong conference. You could think of some decent food destinations in your home bush, right?
I would hope it was Jasmine, but that's about all.
Well, not far off location.
He traveled to Auburn.
He went to Auburn.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Auburn, home to one of my favorite places to eat in Sydney, New Star Kebabs.
Yep.
There's a ton of good Persian places there. Great.
Is that
Lebanese.
Where Maddo is as well?
Great Indian. Yeah, Maddo. Yeah. The Turkish cafe is really good there too. Guess where Bieber ate in Auburn?
I'm waiting to hear.
Nando's.
The worst of Australia's chicken shops. Yep. Like, it's easily a Gallo, then a Porto, and then Nando's. And Nando's is terrible. It's really expensive.
I'd rather a McChicken than Nando's.
Well, yeah, I know, but then you got to tell people you eat McDonald's, and it's only okay if you're drunk. That's the one exception.
It's really expensive.
Nando's is terrible.
It's terrible. Yeah, it's terrible. The little blurb was like, Justin Bieber goes to Auburn to
he couldn't to resist eat. The pull
couldn't
of
resist
the Auburn
pull
food
of
scene.
Auburn multiculturalism. Yeah. He goes to Nando's.
It's all about pulling. He's an absolute tosser. I don't know. That seems like a wasted opportunity, but that's not really his fault because isn't he just a shill? Like, it's surely the people that move him around.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, of course, yeah,
whatever Geppetto was thinking, right up. Because Pinocchio should have eaten something a bit more authentic.
It's baffling though. Like, there's Nando's all over the world, right? Isn't
that? Yeah.
Or is it just UK, Europe in here?
I don't know.
It's a bad chain, but it's crap. So there's enough time wasted on those two subjects.
The guy's rich. Why the fuck are you going to Nando's?
Well, last time he was here, he went to Chuck or Charlie's, and that was like really good.
Willara. Born in Mosman.
Yeah. No, wherever. Willara. I think it was Willara.
The one used to be around the corner from your old house.
No, I think he went to the Mosman one.
You know, though, that like all those things like Hillsong, maybe they own Nando's. Maybe. You know how they all have like a little blurry jeans and all that sort of shit?
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
Maybe it was in his rider, like, you know, you have to eat at this.
We'll pay
you to come out and talk to all the people that like
you
the cross
have
and
to have
stuff.
A cheeky
you
Nando's.
Have to have a Nando's to promote the, failing business. Mm. You know, but if they just had less shit buns, smaller, better chips, and didn't charge $30 for, like, the worst chicken burger in Australia, they wouldn't need Bieber to sit there and eat their shit food.
Simple as that.
Yeah. Get it right, Nando's, you fuckwits.
So, Mike, last time you were on the show, Good Luck Pinbone, which is your current venture as Pinbone with Gemma and Bez, was going strong. This is the one in Kensington. You guys have been open since mid last year?
Yeah, end of October.
End of October, mid. You announced recently that your time in the space is coming to an end in less than a month.
Yeah, that's it. We're gonna turn the walks off. So it's been really good. It'll be just about 11 months, 10 months or something like that once we finish. And I think I told you when we were on here last time, the whole reason for doing this was we found that particular site. We saw an episode of some TV show where these dudes were cooking on woks, and we were thinking, it's been so long, we'd like to do that again.
Because both of you, you both have background at cooking at Billy Kwong.
We had training, and we did it. So, shout out to all the people that came and supported us, and it's been really good. And we've managed to run a BYO restaurant in Sydney for nearly 12 months without going bankrupt. We actually didn't think we'd last more than 3 months, just purely because it's a tough business in Sydney. I will say this, though, we always went with a very sustainable model. We had really cheap rent because they're knocking the building down. We had a ton of media support, social media support, and support from friends. But I would really like to say that the council, the Sydney City Council, who told the businesses that were existing businesses of Kensington and Kingsford that they were going to do that light rail, that just abomination of fucking planning. They weren't going to take away parking. They weren't going to affect their businesses in any way. And they have completely fucked that street. And there's
businesses
there.
They fucked every street anywhere that has anything to do with the light rail.
So we had a six-month goal. So you really couldn't fuck with us. We were going to be there. We were going to get out. No matter what happened, we couldn't really lose. You know, we were lucky. But there's places that have been there for 10 years, 15, 20 years. Really small time, hardworking, small businesses. Restaurants, cafes, hairdressers, pharmacies, news agents. And they are all fucked. And the government and the council just don't give a shit. Yeah. And that's bullshit. You know what I mean? And whilst they're giving all these agreements to people to build gigantic high-rises and put in mass housing and, you know, taking care of their problem, which is finding houses for people in Sydney, they're not doing anything to support that neighbourhood or that culture. Mm. And it's really shit. So for us, you know, we've loved being in Kensington. I would never stay because they've fucked that road altogether.
Yeah.
But there's people there that have got roots, deep roots, people that we love going
and
visiting.
All the Indo stuff there. And
a fantastic food culture. I said this when I started. We were lucky to be in that area. They have fucked those people and they have no voice and it's bullshit. So I just thought I'd use this to just give the council and the government a bit of a kick up the ass to Sam in Perth that's going to listen to what I have to say. And my mom if she listens in. But honestly, it's really disheartening because the letters that you get are just like bullshit. We got one from them the other day saying works are going to disrupt water. And we were like, oh, that's odd. Then the follow-up one was like, there'll be more details to come.
Your water was off.
Between 6 p.m. and 4 a.m. sometimes for the next 5 months. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons we're going. I'm like, what am I going to do on a Saturday night when they decide
all of a sudden
to
their
just
water's off.
Turn the water off for 6 hours? And that's that's for every restaurant on that strip. Yeah.
And so, the fuck thing about that is too, you're only there for whatever, so you can go, okay, we'll just close tonight, whatever.
Yep.
But the people that are stuck there with leases and stuff, there's no, like, their insurance, if the council just goes, we're turning your water off and you have to close and you lose your however many thousands of dollars in trade it might be for that night, your insurance doesn't cover that.
No, it doesn't.
You just fucking lose that money. Too bad.
And it's
and
not,
the council's just like,
and it's not just that one night. It's when people ring up and go, can I order delivery? And you're gone home. Because you're not going to sit in your restaurant all night when there's no water. They get angry. They think you're unreliable. You lose long-term business.
Mm.
When they can't find a park, they just decide to not come.
Yeah.
You know? There's nothing there to remunerate these people. It's really shit. Mm. And I didn't want to come on the Mitchin and Whinge. This is more a...
That's why we have you on.
No, but this is more of a, like, just to show a little respect for people that are working really hard in Sydney.
Yeah, but we know the government doesn't give a fuck.
Oh, this is the only example of the council being Muppets at the moment. I can't think of any.
Look, there's so many. I know the show is full of it all.
It's fucked up. No, I know.
And we could go with broader issues. This is surely like a one-sided argument where no one could justify this.
What's these short-term fixes that fuck up And in doing this short-term fix, you make these fuck-ups that are long-term fuck-ups.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, they're creating this easier transport system for a community that isn't going to exist anymore because they fucked it.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, it'll be ready in 10 years' time. But in the interlying 10 years, the whole area is fucked. Surrey Hills is fucked. George Street's fucked. Everywhere that has anything to do with the light rail, it's a fucking nightmare.
Conspiracy theorists would tell you that if all the shops go out of business, the rents go down, you knock it down, you build a
high rise. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not like that. I mean, not remotely like that.
You can't just... I'm watching this happen in Parramatta now as more places get approved for the super big high rises. There are some enormous, one enormous high rise building in Parramatta now.
So I feel like Parramatta Council's quite forward thinking and they do quite a good plan for the future.
No, that's why I'm bringing it up.
I see them as probably the beacon of New South Wales politics anyway. They seem to be ahead of the game. They've got a plan to make Parramatta, you know, the pinnacle city of New South Wales in 25 years, and they started working on it now. Whereas our council seems to be like, hey, we're going to have the best 1995 roads you've ever seen in 2025. Wait, what the fuck? You know what I mean?
Monorail.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, like the reason I bring up the Parramatta is that they're building these high rises now, knowing that the amount of people that will bring into Parramatta will then boost all of the businesses that are kind of struggling in Parramatta at the moment.
Mm.
Like, you know, Eat Street in Parramatta is pretty shocking, like, as far as the Eat part of it. It's a great street.
That stuff will come. It's definitely a street. That stuff will come in time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was talking to some dudes from Melbourne when they were up. Sorry. I was talking to some dudes from Melbourne when they were up for the AFR Awards. And they were saying one of the things that's wrong with Sydney is no one lives in the CBD anymore.
Mm.
There's no housing in a CBD. So there's no culture. Everyone's there and they run home. So it's really good between that sort of 5 to 8 o'clock at night period because everyone goes, has dinner and gets out.
Mm.
But the Sydney transport's so shit that if you're not on a train,
it's
going to take you 3 hours to get home. So you've got to plan for these things. Whereas in Melbourne, they all live in amongst the CBD. There's a really beautiful blended culture.
More than 10 minutes. No, it's fucking ridiculous. I'll play a nightclub there that's like 15 minutes away from where people live and they'll be like, oh, Hawthorne. I traveled here from Sydney. Like, I was doing 3 hours door to door.
And you have impeccable transport where the buses, trams, trains all line up and you can use one pass to get on all of them. Yeah, Melbourne. You have transport.
Good for you, Melbourne. So a big story that came out last week through Good Food, written by our friend Miffy Rigby over at Good Food, was one titled No More Kitchen Nightmares, What It's Like to Be a Young Chef Today. And this was half a way to... I mean, it could have been two stories, really. Half of it is announcing the finalists for the Josephine Pignolet Young Chef of the Year Award, which Good Food do. They used to do it state by state, but now that it is a national publication... Oh, no, has that always been a national thing?
No, it was just always New South Wales only.
Right.
There was other things that came in, but it was always... Josephine, there was the New South Wales thing. Yeah. And then Melbourne brought in a young chef, and then I don't think Perth or Queensland or Adelaide ever had anything, really. But.
So, for the first time ever, the Josephine Pignolet Award, which Mitch has been a previous winner of in the past, is national. So, you have chefs from... And this is worth talking about. We've got it's still mostly New South Wales-based chefs. You've got Kylie from Attica in there. You've got William from Homage in Queensland, and Michael Carey from Jones & Co. And then we've also got Matthew from The Dolphin. We've got Reese from Sepia. We've got Lex from Oscillate Widely. We've got Yuri from Automata, and Aaron Ward from Sixpenny as well in there. So some great restaurants being represented there. And it is interesting. I mean, as someone I knew you weren't necessarily nominated, but you—that was. You know,
well, you nominate yourself, right? I went in it. I never made the finals.
Mitch, like, what do you think? As you know, as an alumni of this award, do you think it lessens the impact by making it national, or strengthens it?
No, I think it probably strengthens it. It makes it a nationally recognized thing, as opposed to just a Sydney recognized thing. But I think Sydney always had the most prestige. Anyway, like the JP Award always had the most prestige of any of the Young Chef Awards, even though it was New South Wales based. But it's cool to see it go go national along with the guide, and then it sort of competes with the, like, it's national, and then all the sort of young chef competitions are on the same sort of stage, I guess.
Yeah, and I think opposed to like the guide going national where they compare restaurant to restaurant, which is stupid, you can't do it. Like, the national guide is literally just to sell papers or keep up with other people, but it doesn't work. Like, what's happening in Perth to what's happening in Sydney, it never is a fair equivalent. Like, it's stupid to try to do a national guide. Like, I understand logistically and all that.
I guess it's kind of good for tourism because you have this guide already, and then it's like, oh, we're going to Melbourne. What? Let's read this guide again.
Yeah, but that's tourism's fault. It's apples to apples, oranges to oranges. You know what I mean? Like, the best restaurants in Sydney versus the best restaurants in Northern Territory. It's stupid.
Please keep the bashing to Perth.
No, let's broaden our audience. You know what I mean? Let's offend everyone everywhere. But I think so one thing that some people may or may not know is, like, so the Josephine Pignolet Award is basically a gut instinct from a panel of you know.
It's more about the kind of person you are than it's Damien necessarily and his the chef you are.
Cohorts that he thinks are going to, his opinions matter to him. And so you can definitely compare a young chef from Sydney to a young chef from Melbourne, because it's not about the food they're putting up, it's about the person that they are, the career they want to take.
Why the fuck did Mitch win?
a few years ago, Mitch was a human.
Because people with much more informed knowledge and opinions than you, let's decide.
Yeah, look, I think it's important to know there's really talented young people out there, and even Damien makes mistakes.
Yeah, but basically the idea of the award is to keep the spirit and memory of Josephine alive, and to choose people that embody her love of the industry and her passion and all of those sort of cliche kind of words. But
she was a big sneakerhead.
They do have meaning.
It's meant to be a timeless decision. So it's not about, like, you go in and how well you French out a, you know, rabbit rack, and then 10 years later no one Frenches out rabbit rack. So it's all about how you make the best, like, you know, foam. That those sort of cooking competitions can leave a, you know, there can be really trend like influence, whereas this is like, it's meant to be a lasting award. So it doesn't matter if Mitch stops cooking next week and never runs another kitchen, but they pick him because they know he'll influence the industry in a certain way. So whether he becomes a commentator, or he does a cooking school, or he runs a farm, or, you know, he does tours to the regional New South Wales with young chefs, or he runs a TAFE course, it's not saying you've won this award, please go and become a three-hat restaurant. Fantastic if you do. But if you are doing that, or you are a commentator, or you are a media personality, or you are anything to do with our industry, and we hope you stay in it forever, please keep the same ethos, the same ethics, and nurture that through, because that is what Josephine was all about.
Yep.
That's what she embodied. It's not saying that Josephine made the best, you know, poulet vingt-jean or anything like that. Yep. It's saying that people that worked for her, you know, were drawn to her because of these qualities. We see them in you. Please keep it going. And that's a beautiful award, and that's why it was prestigious.
Yeah.
You know? And along with that, they happen to have picked some phenomenal chefs who are now doing amazing things.
Yeah, and we've had most of them on the show, a few of them on an episode by themselves last year. You should go back and check it out. I'm pretty sure we'd said something about Josephine Pignolet in the episode title.
Yeah, it's never a bad subject to talk about. There's really deep people.
Because it's like you get interviewed in front of the panel, right? Like, that's the main thing of it.
You basically nominate yourself. It's an open competition. You write a thesis, so to speak, on your philosophy on food and what you want to do in your career and what you want to achieve. And the idea of the award is that it gives you an opportunity to travel and go and learn and see things, and then bring that back to Sydney and now your respective city around Australia to add to the culture in your city. So you send in your letter and you get shortlisted, and then you go and sit at a pretty scary panel of people. When I went, it was Damien, Yanni, and a couple of Damien Josephine's closest friends who were loosely connected to the industry. And now I think it's Damien, Phil Wood, Miffy, and I can't remember who the other person was this year.
You can always rotate.
Yeah. But, you know, so if it's Phil, it's not so scary. But, but yeah, and then you go and you just have basically a conversation like we would have, you know, when I went for my interview. It basically turned into Damien and Yanni telling stories about their back in their heyday and that kind of thing. And for me, that was amazing. You know, like, that was an insight into something that I'd only heard about and I hadn't seen, and it gave me a chance to interact with them and for them to see why I like the industry and what I love about it and where I wanted to take it and that kind of thing. So it's like an open, they have points that they try and hit and they want to gauge where you're at mentally and what you want to achieve and that kind of thing. But then it's more about what you care about and what you want to do with your future in the industry. So it's quite, I think it's quite a unique award in that sense.
How much of your interview revolved around Vanilla Pepsi?
Fucking hell. You have to make a joke of everything, don't you, Libs?
Good stuff, everybody. Good stuff. So the other part of this award, and we'll find out which of these finalists gets to win, is the winner during the Good Food Awards later in the year. But the bulk of this article...
Oh, wait, I want to touch on that just real quick. So my favorite part about the whole like Joseph Pignolet Award is every guy and girl in Sydney trying to figure out who it is,
yeah,
and everybody's bullshit story about how it's not them every year, yeah. And then everyone's conspiracy theory about like
who it is.
Yeah. And it's always wrong. It's the best. Every year it's this
can
person.
Can you go into detail about this? Like...
It doesn't really matter. So I know the year Terry won, he was so adamant that he didn't win. He was like, "Oh, I didn't get it." He was gutted. And then he got up on the stage, and we were like, "Ah, you fuckwit!" You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So everyone always has a year they think you're the winner. And I got nominated one year as the guy that was going to win, and all these people were texting me and stuff. Yeah. I was like, "I didn't even fucking go in it." You know what I mean? Yeah. So
I was pretty sure Gemma won it last year.
Yeah, no,
the year before.
No, she wasn't it. She was like, "People keep fucking ranting and telling me I won the Pignolet." I was like, sorry, man. Sometimes you just have a bad year. You know, like, so, yeah. No, but that's my favorite. The people in the industry will know. It's quite funny. It always haunts around. You know what I mean? Everyone thinks they've locked it down.
Yeah. So, who do you reckon will be this year?
I don't know. It's a pretty strong crew. And you know what, Mitchy? Like, for the first time, I think in... Or maybe last year as well. For the first time, I feel a little old. Because I don't know the...
You don't know most of who they are.
Because for the last 15 years... It's been all of our friends and our peers, and now we're in that 35-year-old bracket, and so it's like you've got to be under 30. So it's just, I think it's a too big a gap. I know about six people on that list.
Yeah, I know three or four or five. I think
I'll be quite happy if any of them want to be honest. Yeah. You know, so I think, I mean, it's a funny one. Like,
word on the street is at the moment that it's Kylie from Attica.
See, okay, so I mean, I think she's a fantastic winner, but it also depends what they want to get from giving the award, because sometimes it makes them pretty different decisions. So she's had a fantastic career with like doors opening for her, and she's gone everywhere and traveled. Like, she's worked in some of the best kitchens in the world.
Yeah.
So they'll take that into account and go, maybe not, do you need this award?
Yeah, exactly.
She's a phenomenally trained and worldly chef now, which is fucking amazing for her. And because it's not like the Electrolux, you're the best chef, it's kind of also like, what can we do to give you a lifetime experience? So for instance, I might see someone else on there who's hasn't had those experiences, and I'll think, well, fuck,
maybe they'll get it.
They'll get it. You know what I mean? So the one thing I'll say about this, it shouldn't say best young chef, you know, because it's, they don't pick it on that necessarily, because it's not like, if you work your ass off and train and have, you know, the best like resume, it can actually work against you, because they're looking for someone that they can prop up and, you know,
which is why I won at Levs.
It is one of the reasons, Mitchy, because you didn't have the best resume when you...
No, I had a terrible resume. I still have a terrible resume.
Yeah. I mean, if you scrap the last two places you worked out, it'd be all right. No, but honestly, like, so we'll see. We'll see who wins. But they pick based on gut instincts. So
yeah.
Of course, it's training and skill. They don't want a donkey, you know what I mean, anymore.
And you get some award money, and the idea is that you further your career.
You get sponsorship money and some flights overseas and help in organizing stages and that kind of thing. And that's the idea, is that you go and travel and see some things that maybe you wouldn't have had the opportunity to see and learn, and then you come back and bring that back to your respective city.
Yeah, and you can use that money to put towards doing a stage somewhere that you think will help your cooking style. Yeah. And you went to Italy, and you went to
Francescana,
which is that the spot that Aziz ate in Maserano?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I caught up like halfway through that season. How fucking
it's
good!
Fucking
is
so good,
Chef Jeff.
It's so good.
I was like, I hate those first three episodes.
I love
way
it.
Way too twee. I can't handle
it's
it.
So good.
You watch Master of None, Mike?
Yes, I do.
The last two, the dating episode with the Tinder stuff.
Yeah,
I thought
it
was brilliant. And then Chef Jeff, Bobby Cannavale. Holy fuck! That was is he an ongoing character?
Yeah, keep watching. Hell yeah, keep watching.
I'm all about him. He's great.
Yeah,
sorry. I didn't. Yeah, we can go on to the next bit. I didn't mean to interrupt your little
flow. No. There's never a flow here.
Yeah, I know.
So the other part of this article, unless we want to keep talking about Master of None, you guys can spoil the rest of the season for me. I really want to talk about Master of None.
I've watched it three
like a million other podcasts. Can't you bring it up with something else?
Yeah,
talk about TV and shit.
Mitch
on all
actually watches more television than the co-host of both of my more television leaning. Like, one of them is explicitly about television, and Angus has only watched Twin Peaks.
Angus has like an encyclopedic memory of all food articles and cooking techniques. Yeah. So it's kind of just a weird choice. But, you know.
So yeah, anyway, the article that this was attached to, the Josephine Pignolet winners, was as I said earlier, No More Kitchen Nightmares: What It's Like to Be a Young Chef Today.
And which is a bit of a misleading title.
I think it was maybe like two things are being worked on at the moment, or maybe it's like a kind of like, this is how much better young chefs have it than young chefs did however many years ago.
I'd say Miffy was overseas and her article got chopped and changed while she wasn't able to say stop being a douchebag. Had to guess.
Yeah, the article is something that we've spoken about a couple of times in the past on the Mitchin, and that is, you know, how physical abuse used to, and sometimes verbal abuse and sometimes physical abuse would be the norm in kitchens, you know, 20 to 15 years ago, in Sydney.
Okay, so I'm gonna pick up on this. So the article pulls out Justin Camp, Liam Tomlin, you know, Marco Pierre White, Gordon Ramsay. And says that, oh, kitchens like this, that's what they were, you know what I mean? Well, that's bullshit. Okay, so you've grabbed four people, and I don't care if it was every kitchen. The way it's described and the way people go on about these older brigades and these older restaurants is that all you did was you walked in at 7 a.m. and someone started yelling at you, right? But that's not really the case. No. So in all those kitchens and all those places, they've had phenomenal, like, lineage of chefs come out of them, right? So somewhere in that kitchen, someone was nurturing,
I'm glad you're touching on this.
Right? I'm so sick of reading these articles that just grab, and it's not Miffy. This isn't Miffy at all. This is what people want to hear. Old brigade used to bollock and yell. I don't care if Tomlin only yelled. That's fine. If that's all he did and screamed and called you a piece of shit, that's fine. He hired people down the line to look after his food and to look after his crew. And every single one of the guys and girls that came out of that kitchen went on to be a fucking phenomenal chef. Mm-hmm. You know, they had the whole idea of having a bollocking only kitchen, right, is just what TV and people on the outside want to hear and want to see. The thing is, and what chefs recant when they're asked are the fun stories of getting bollocked, right, or the nightmare stories. And that's what kitchen nightmares and the furnace and all these terms came with, right? But what you don't remember is when someone says to you, oh, when we get lettuce in, we wash it because it's covered in dirt, right? You go, oh, yeah, I don't eat dirt. That makes sense. So you just fucking do it, right? Yeah. So you don't get bollocked for that ever. But you don't recant that sort of thing and go, oh, one day Marco came in, it was 7 a.m. and he said, wash the lettuce because it's dirty. And I said, I'm going to wash the lettuce. Like, no one wants to hear that. And even if you say it, it gets edited. It'll get edited out of this. You know what I mean? But what... And to be honest, like, what you hear is stories where you get bollocked, right? So Tomlin, there's a quote in there. It's like, they didn't get bollocked for the first 20 perfect tortellinis. They got bollocked for the 21st one that was wrong.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Because the thing is, like, we aren't allowed to send out a single plate of food that's any good. Because even if the other 20 tables had a good tortellini, they're not... If I give that one a shit one, you can't say to that table, oh, you see, those guys are really happy. Yeah. Oh, those guys are really happy with those tortellinis. Yours are shit, but... Come on, guys. It's like 99% of it was really good.
Yeah.
So we're held to higher standards and we have to pass that on. And the whole thing with bollocking, right, and this whole story of how kitchens are these amazing, happy places now, it's all bullshit.
They're still not.
Bullshit. Every single one of those people in the weird photo with their colourful faces and their heads talking about the new brigade, all bollock people and all get bollocked. And it's all in context. Like, I don't bollock anyone, you know, for things that aren't important. But you bollock them if they need to remember something. You know what I mean? To be honest, the last...
I've actually seen one of the finalists for the Josephine Finley Young Chef of the Year, the award, bollock someone.
Absolutely. And you know what? I would probably back them that they were making the right call. Now, we can all stand here and say the kitchens are shit and you need to be a more nurturing and good environment. No one's saying that's not true. But to make this statement that, like, the old brigade were doing it wrong and that the new brigade are doing it right is just a bullshit statement. And I'll tell you, the last time I handed out a proper bollocking, it wasn't at this restaurant now. Like, I call our chef into line, but that's fine. He's not a dickhead. He listens and he moves on. We don't need to bollock one another. Like, it's how it is. But the last time I bollocked someone, we had the nurturing process. So we had a dietary in, and they'd alerted us, and they said they were a nut allergy. We went through the kitchen. We talked to all the chefs. We said, blah, 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 nut, nut, nut. Took all the nuts away from sections and all this sort of stuff. Bang. Someone else came in, deep fried a hole of nuts in a fryer. Didn't tell anyone. And that person was already told about the nut allergy that was coming in, the anaphylactic nut allergy that had emailed us and contacted us, right? Now, it never got to a bad stage because luckily Gemma was there doing her job and noticed that that had happened, right? But we had to take four things off the menu because it was the middle of service, right? And we couldn't use the fryer. We couldn't use it to center that table, right? And we didn't have time to change the oil out. You're in the middle of service. You can't dump a fryer, reheat it, right? So that person got bollocked. But we'd already been through the nurturing stage. We'd already mm-hmm. been through the explaining stage. Mm-hmm. It didn't seep into them that it was really, really important. And we're not talking about, you know, picking your lettuce leaves so that they're all, you know, off no stem. I'm talking about killing people.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, people just say it's food. But you know what? We're stuck with some really hectic responsibilities these days between crustacean allergies and nut allergies, gluten intolerance, dairy intolerance. You know, we're accountable across the board for people's lives. Like, and not dramatizing this. We're not doctors. But people put their health in our hands and we take it really seriously. Like, I know Mitch does. I fucking do. You know, every restaurant does. And if you have a friend or a sibling or a child that has allergies and you go to dinner and you give people notice, you expect them that they're going to do that.
Respect that and look after you.
So most of the time I bollock someone, really, really bollock them. It's about hygiene or, you know, food rotation or things that are going to come back to bite us on the ass, yeah. You know, because they need to know that it's not about putting a piece of cheese on bread and melting it under a salamander. If you burn that, well, you burn it. I call you an idiot. You move on. You do it again. We get it right.
Mm.
But if you start putting, like, you know, raw chicken above lettuce leaves, you're going to get bollocked because you're going to hurt someone. You know what I mean? Like,
that's yeah.
And I'm only bollocking you. So you never ever do it again.
Bollock them the first time. No. The first three times.
No.
You probably say, yo, we don't do this way. And here's X, Y, Z reason why we do it the way we do it.
Yep.
Okay. I told you we've done it. We do it this way. Don't do it this way, et cetera, et cetera. And then the third time, if they still haven't learned, then it's like, I fucking told you.
Yeah.
Just do it properly. You know why we've been through it. Stop being a dickhead, pull your head out of your ass and concentrate.
Yeah.
And it's probably doesn't even get any loud. My voice won't get any louder than that. But the nurturing process is there and we've been through the this is why we do things, this is how we do them. And it's not only that, it's that it's our livelihood as well, right? It's our business, it's our name on the door. And especially in today, like, we should probably be handing out more bollocking because the feedback with the internet and everything now, the effect that it has on your business is so much more immediate and so much more, so multiplied so much more than it used to be from just, you know, when a reviewer comes in and that kind of thing. Like, it's so important to get things right.
Yeah.
And the care that chefs have now, young chefs, not all of them, there are some fucking fantastic ones, but the general level of care and responsibility that young chefs take in industry, it's so much less than what I feel we had and probably the generation before us feels they had, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know?
Yeah, and I think it's really disrespectful to the old brigade to say that all they did was yell and scream.
Hmm.
We all understand that yelling and screaming doesn't get the message across. There has to be two levels.
Yeah.
So there's that explanation, there's the theory, there's the nurturing, and then there's the full stop at the end of it, the exclamation mark, the this is why it's fucking happening. And if you want to undermine what they've done in the past and say that all they did was yell and call you a cunt, it's just bullshit. They might have done that more than us. You know, they might have yelled and screamed and carried on like pork chops a little more than us. But to say that they didn't underpin it with the nurturing and care, it's crap. Like, but maybe the way that people did the nurturing and the care was a little different. Maybe it was going to the pub after service and drinking till 3 a.m. and the boss bought the rounds. Maybe that's what it was. You know what I mean? There was always a staff dinner. There was always, you know, kitchens survive, mate. Like, people are here. I got trained by people that got bollocked. Yeah. They got trained by people that got bollocked. So it can't have been that bad. You know what I mean?
And I wouldn't be where I am if it wasn't for the bollockings I took. Because I never would have fucking learned anything.
And the irony is, like, I would say that of those eight people that are in the running, if they win, they'll probably go to a kitchen overseas where they get bollocked for 6 months. You know what I mean? And you know what? Like, your social media profile and your media profile and the way your kitchens run might not include bollockings, but when you turn a blind eye and your sous chef goes in the cool room and bollocks the crap out of someone, that bollock still came from the top chef.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you might be on there playing with some coconut you found on a beach washed up on the shores, but if your sous chef's in there tearing someone a new asshole that's in there starging for free because he picked a herb wrong, don't tell me you don't believe in bollockings. You know what I mean? It's not a caring, wonderful world. You know, we're not here to tell dark secrets because we all have them, but don't believe this bullshit that the industry's changed and that because you see a couple of dudes happy and smiling with their first year apprentice.
But
you know what I mean?
The thing about it is too that it's not personal.
No.
It's simply, it's not a fucking office or, you know, a big company where you fucking email HR and then the HR sits you down 3 weeks later and you have a discussion and you shake hands and have a hug. It's immediate because someone wants their plate of food in 5 minutes and they don't give a fuck why it hasn't come. They just care that it's not on their table and it's not at the level that they're expecting for the money that they're paying. It's a completely different environment.
Yeah, and one of the things they touch on in this is a chef shortage, industry shortage, so you've got to be better, have a better working environment. All that's true, right? So what I would say is it's a two-way respect street. If you're in there as the boss or the leader or the head chef or whatever and working really hard and coming up with original, creative and fun food and doing things that are challenging people below you and they want to learn from you, they respect you and they'll stay. And if they're working really hard and trying to do their best, even if you bollock them every now and then, but you respect them, they'll stay. And basically, that's what it comes down to. So if you're losing chefs, there's a lack of respect at one end. So either you're disrespecting them or they're disrespecting you. But it's pretty easy to get it and give it. You know what I mean? And I think if it's a two-way street, then as Mitch said, it's an immediate response to things, but it's also immediately forgotten the way it was described, but the message stays with you. And that's where the respect comes in. So you might bollock them for one thing, but then you might pull them aside and give them a really good pep talk and a really good deep analysis of what's going on and why. You know what I mean? And sometimes as much as a throwaway line as like, this was a really good week for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I had a few of those. Someone just said you had a really good week.
Yeah.
And it just makes everything, like, you could get bollocked 300 times, but they know that as a whole you've gotten better. Yeah. And that it's fine.
You know, or even you get bollocked for fucking that one thing up and the next three times you do it properly and you go, yo, that's it, that's how I want it.
And that's
the way to do it.
That's what you're working against these days, is that we don't have there's accountability across every single element for every single occasion, not just a close enough is good enough. And you know, there's a broader picture of people saying, you know, every kid gets an award for competing as opposed to, you know, winning. And I'm not buying into, I don't know enough to buy into that argument, but it is like a little bit like that in the kitchen where it's not just a, you know, you didn't just compete, so thank you. You know, it's like, we're doing this perfectly. You know, I'm doing it perfectly and I'm not too proud to turn to Gemma at the middle of service and be like, I think I fucked this. Taste it. And she'll go, it's fucked. Start again. You know what I mean? I'm human. You know what I mean? And we all rely on one another. You know what I mean? And if I put up a dish that was shit, I would expect to get bollocked, whether it came from Gemma.
Or from the customer. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the reason, because I was too proud to ask someone in my brigade that, can you check this? And we ask Brando, you know, like if we're unsure, we go to everyone, you know. So I'll go to the waiters. I'll be like, Bez, can you taste this sauce? Like, we're just not happy with it. But we care, you know what I mean? I could send it, you know, but I've learned over time, I'm not too humble to start again. I'll start anything again. And I don't mind if my chefs have to waste food. If it's not right, we just do it again.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes stuff still goes out and it's not right. And if it gets sent back, and the customer's not happy, but we executed it right, I'll say, there's nothing wrong with that, but let's give them dessert or something.
Yeah, exactly.
If it comes back and we fucked it up and it slipped through all the checkpoints, yo, we fucked that up. Sorry, here's another one. Here's dessert. Have a drink. Whatever. We'll make it up to you. But the guys have to understand that money comes out of the business's pocket. And if they don't take responsibility, there's so many repercussions of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the hard part. Like, I can't remember who told me, but someone said to me the other week that they had a young chef in their kitchen that fucked something up, and they've been told repeatedly not to do that or whatever, and they continue to do it, and they got a little bit of a bollocking, and their response was, the question came, why are you doing it like this? And the response was, I don't care.
Fuck.
If you don't care, what are you doing here?
It's just a job to them.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But it's not. It's not just an office job. It's not, you know, like, it's a completely different world. And that's what people don't understand. And that's what the public doesn't understand, because every time there's a fucking MasterChef or a TV show or whatever, everything's romanticized. Or it's the other way and everything's all the yelling and all the fucking bollocking. There's no actual reality to it.
On that romanticizing, I think this article exists because bollocking has been romanticized. And this article is almost like a counter to, like, you know, maybe Gordon Ramsay isn't right all the time.
But you know what? You speak to any of Gordon's chefs or Marco's chefs or anyone like that, and they have nothing but respect and admiration for them. And they say, Marco taught me everything I know. Gordon taught me everything I know. He might be a cunt, and maybe we don't get along now because we've had a couple of dust-ups and he didn't support me when I left the kitchen or whatever. But they look back on that time and go, I learned so fucking much, and those chefs nurtured me and taught me so much, and I wouldn't be where I am without them. You know, that's 99.9% of the time is the story. But what gets picked on is, you know, you're an idiot sandwich.
I would still recommend reading this article just for the extremely juicy insight into people like, what's his name, Matt Kemp. This paragraph is incredible. Kemp, famous for his rages, he once called his then wife and business partner a cunt on national television. She was pregnant at the time, has been forced to soften over the years. I think that is inspirational.
Do you remember hearing about that?
Yeah. What television show was that? I don't know, but that
was like a big thing at the time. I remember hearing about it as like a second year apprentice or something.
That's fucking insane.
Probably made him famous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what people want to see. There's bad choice of words and bad timing, but that's the industry we work in, and no one's defending it, and he's not defending it.
No.
And would I say he's softened? I fucking doubt it. I reckon if you caught Kempy on the right day, he'd still tear you a fucking new one.
He'd still call your pregnant wife a cunt.
He'd still call you a fucking cunt. But you know what? He would just hand them out more accurately. Maybe doesn't not throwaways as often.
Make sure you're not pregnant before he calls you a cunt.
You don't soften, you get wiser. You know what I mean? Yeah. You just know when to do it. You get a bit better. Like when you're young and your pressure's on and you don't know how to handle it.
Yeah, that's it.
You're just stupid.
And that's part of it too. It's such a high pressure thing.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And, you know, it's everything to you and... chick like comes out in the moment because it's like, so immediate.
As far as service goes, 9 times out of 10, if I'm yelling, I'm probably in the wrong. I would say I'm probably wrong to do it, and I've worked for about 5 years to try to cull it back down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But sometimes you just do it and it's just stupid. And you either apologize or you make up for it or whatever. But most of the time people just ignore me. Yeah. You know what I mean? They're just like, oh, what a fucking idiot. Like, you
know, whatever, mate.
Yeah. It's good that they have that insight as well, you know what I mean? And hopefully people learn from what you're doing wrong as well. Because don't forget, like, there's always that, you know, teaching by doing the wrong thing too. Yeah. So, I mean, we've all had people that yelled at us and we thought, won't do that. Then you do it and you're like, I'll do that less.
Yeah.
I never yelled at my kitchen staff. In fact, my restaurant closed exactly 3 years ago today.
Yeah, right.
But I yelled at the floor staff all the time.
Yeah.
The miscommunication between the kitchen and the floor was like the biggest source of anger.
When Bea was chef. Pregnant?
Yeah.
She was pregnant for a good... I don't think I ever called her.
I haven't yelled... I never will. Yeah, I haven't yelled at it.
She called me one once a New Year's Eve.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
I haven't yelled at kitchen staff in a long time. Like, I don't remember. Like, they might remember, but I don't remember.
Is that because you're not in the kitchen?
I haven't even yelled at floor staff in a long time. I kind of... And that's because I've sort of learnt how to deal with stuff a bit better and how to take the aggression, for lack of a better word, out of my responses to things. You know, I'll give Cam a bollocking and, like, take my anger out on Cam and have him go and be nice about it to all the staff or tell me I'm a fucking idiot and I just needed to get out of my system and I'm like, okay. Well, I tend to go quiet now and everyone knows when I'm shitty because I'm just fucking quiet and that's more of a signal than, oh, fuck, what have we done?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Go and do something else for about a minute.
Yeah.
Just and if I come back and yell at you, you're really fucked up. You know what I mean? Like, most of the time I just eat it and I might have a little quiet word and be like, oh, that was, you know, a little
Why is Mike out the back playing Yo-Ho Diet? Oh, yeah,
they know. I think it's the re-entry. Yeah. I think I got that from my mother. You know, she used to walk away and come back and be like, and furthermore.
So, the walk away is a good one.
Sometimes you're going to go outside for a minute, eat it, and it's used, and it either goes down or comes up. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah. We had a, he's still a very good friend of mine. He was vegetarian at the time. Never ever hit the veggie button. So I'm responsible. He's responsible for at least 20 customers having a bite of meat and then sending the dog back to the kitchen. And like, I was like, you're fucking vegetarian. How is it you who fucks this up every time? Yeah. And you know, those veggie hot dogs, they're not cheap. They're like three times the price of a meat one.
I think too, like, you learn, like, it's not so much coping mechanisms, like, because I think me and Mitch just admitted then that we try to improve as humans.
Yeah.
But one of the things that a new business and new chefs and new teams, floor, front of house, back of house, everybody, there's problems that you don't foresee. And so what you do is you basically just eliminate them over time. And so you see the older front of house and the older kitchens, then just as aggressive and stupid, they've done it before.
Yeah.
You don't do it again. You know what I mean? Like, you learn. Like, if you put yourself in the shit one day and everything goes to crap and everyone's yelling at each other, well, you don't fucking do that again. Yeah. You know what I mean? If you're a good team,
exactly.
You move forward. You know what I mean? And that's what it's all about. Being a team and moving forward. So everyone just forgets what happens, but they remember why it happened. You know?
Yeah.
Is there a particular bollocking that you guys received that's memorable, or is it all just blended into, you know?
Yeah, I received a couple. Danny Russo gave me a couple good ones, and I was a little shit. Like, I found them quite funny some of the time because Danny would fly off the handle and swear at me in Italian and call me a couple of Italian names and then, you know, call me a couple of English ones as well. And I would stick my head in the fridge and have a little giggle and the sous chef would come, don't let him fucking see you laughing, you little shit.
So I never got, like, I started when I was 25 and I was 110 kilos and 6'4", so I didn't get that many bollockings, funnily enough. Not many people wanted to really pull me aside and sort of, you know, throw their weight around because they didn't have a chance. But Puskas used to fucking rip me when I was a first year apprentice. Yeah. And
he kind of apologized for that when he was on the Mitchin last year.
Oh, yeah, but I don't think he should have, because honestly, if I didn't get ripped into by him, but you know what? Like, every time he gave it to me, I deserved it. I was arrogant, I was cocky, I was stupid, and he just fucking pegged me back a million times until I was humble and open to learning. And you know, and if he hadn't done that, I would never have grown. I once spilled, and like, you know, the thing is, the ones you remember, the ones where you feel like hard done by.
Yeah.
So like, they had the ricketyest piece of shit equipment, right? And we had this fucking freezer that was always imbalanced and they kept all their own weird savory shit in there. And I was in charge of pastry, right? And I had to put this fucking granita in there and I put it on the square gastro and it was like liquid. And I put it in and it just, like, tipped up and
it was
fell
balancing precarious. Right? I remember the granita section of that
shit.
Freezer.
It wasn't my fault. This is why, you know, you're aggrieved because you're like, it wasn't my fault. Anyway, the thing fell. mid-service, obviously, because it's going in and up with this fucking thing. And so the grenade just froze all through there. And then I got so bollocked for it, right? But the only reason I cared was because I was like, how is this my fucking fault, right? So that's how I felt the whole time. How is this my fault? How is my... I had to sit there and chip it all out, and it was like frozen ice. But now I think, well, it was my fault. I didn't wrap the fucking thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I would at the time, I felt, you know, really hard done by, but I was arrogant and I was like, oh, woe is me. Wasn't my fault. But really it was, you know, and I learned.
I had one at Pello, Thomas, the same sort of thing. The cool room was a piece of shit. And we went through this period over Christmas with fucking balls deep, short staffed, like prepping everything every day, making 15 purees and this and that. And I was fucking slate, like working my ass off, and I was on plus. And the cool room would work all day, but overnight it would turn off and no one knew. So you come in the next day and all your shit would have turned. So you come, fuck, I just made all this prep. Why the fuck, what's wrong with it? So you come in and be balls deep again and again and again. And one time, I can't remember what it was. I was cooking a bit of fish or something like that. And Thomas had run out of something on his section on the pass that was my responsibility to have back up in the service fridge and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't have it there. And he just fucking lost it. He threw a spoon across the kitchen and fucking threw the container of puree and puree across the wall and just let me have it. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's in the cool room, chef. Run to the cool room. That was probably the best one ever. And I don't even remember what it was about. And I kind of remember being like really fucking scared because Thomas is quite a large man and I'm quite a small little human, but I look back on it fondly because I learned, that was the hardest job I ever had, but I learned so much out of that kitchen. So it's not a negative thing, you know what I mean? And then the same thing, like once that moment finished, it finished and the nurturing started again, you know?
Yeah, it's, but like, you know, it's that thing. It's like nothing rewarding is ever easy.
No, exactly.
It's like that, you know, like people always, I hear a lot because I'm trying to train at the moment, and that everyone always says no one ever wants to go to the gym, but you never regret it once you've left.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I've obviously, you know, eating and very opposite ends of the spectrum, but that you have to work and do hard work that fucking sucks sometimes to feel really rewarded by a situation.
Yeah.
Growing is hard.
Learning lessons. Yeah.
Learning and growing and educating and skilling up and doing all those things is difficult. I don't care what field you're in. If it's not, you're probably not pushing yourself, you know, and I think it's always just exacerbated in a kitchen. It's sped up.
Yeah.
We want to get you there quicker, you know, without taking shortcuts. And that's the key, you know. And if you're a young chef and you listen, don't fucking take shortcuts. You know, do the hard things. Because once you've done the hard things, you know, you grow. If you don't,
stop staying in kitchens for 3 months and fucking moving around and think you've learned something.
Yep.
Yeah, and if you have a problem with your head chef, talk to him and maybe
talk to him. Yeah, exactly. That's the other thing. Like, I get the most shitty when my staff don't come and talk to me.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be that night after we've had a little incident or whatever. But you can come to me at the end of the week or the start of the next week or when you know I have time to sit down and have a discussion with you. Or, you know, it might even be if you want to go on a holiday. Come and talk to me and say, hey, I want to go and do this. Can we work it out? Of course we fucking can. But don't just go and do shit and go here. You know, like communication is so fucking important at all levels.
And it's,
and that's what growing and learning is. Yeah. And that's what's changing is us becoming approachable.
Yeah.
And even back then, like Danny would bollock me all the time. But if he knew something was wrong with me, he would reach out and say, hey, come on, let's have a chat. Let's have a cup of tea. Tell me what's going on. What's up?
Is this your love of tea origin story?
No, Danny would always ply coffee down my throat. And I think that's why I don't like coffee anymore. But
it's one of those things, like, you know, where the term comes into kitchens all the time, like pushing on. And we never want you to push on if you're depressed and upset and sad. That's not pushing on. That's different. That's a negative connotation with that term. Pushing on to me means coming in and just banging out
your knees
on
plus. Racing to that finish line together.
It's not together. It's showing a bit of initiative. If you're a young chef and you want to make it in this industry, don't take shortcuts. And when I say push on, if you're really struggling, talk to us about stuff. Mm. But what I want you to do is come in and knock out your mise en place.
Concentrate.
And then I'm going to give you more, which is the opposite of what they want. you know. Yeah. And until they realize that, they won't really make it. But what you really want to do is they'll take 8 hours to do something, then they'll take 6 hours, then they'll take 5 hours to do something. And when they get to 5 hours, I'm going to add 3 more hours of work to their section, and they're going to be like, fuck, man, I just got another, you know. But what they really don't know is in another year's time, they'll be doing twice as much work in half the amount of time. Exactly. And that's what pushing on is. And every time people that work for us push on, come in and bang out a job in half the time, my reward is I give them another job. But the next job I give them is a better job. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Something they're going to learn, a new technique, yep, whatever it might be, getting to do the proteins or whatever.
And if you don't, I will make you do the same thing every day for the rest of your life because that's the job.
I always say to my guys, I don't care what time you start. You can start at 4 p.m. if you can have all your prep done by 5. But if you can't, then you need to come in at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
And if you can come in at 12 and get your work done, then I don't have an issue with that. I would rather you be here less and be working more efficiently and concentrating than be here and feel like you're here for so fucking long and doing all these hours and you don't have any time to do anything. You know, that's the balance. Come in, don't fuck around, concentrate, work efficiently, learn your workflow and bust it out. That's what pushing on is. And then you can go for a swim in the morning, you can have a sleep in, you can go and have breakfast, you can do whatever you want. And then if you've got all your stuff done by 4 o'clock and we clean down and we sit up, then you've got an hour and a half for staff meal.
Yeah.
And you can sit on your phone, you can fucking smoke cigarettes, you can do whatever you want. But if you don't and you're a donkey, then you're going to have a shit day at work all the time because you're constantly behind. And we want everyone's life to be easy.
Yeah. So when we started Pinbone, it was the three of us in the kitchen, like doing prep, and we were like pushing to get it done. So me and Jem, push. And like Brando, who's our third, you know, he did his bit, but it wasn't carrying his own weight. And we've pushed him now for 12 months nearly. And now I don't need to do any prep at all, basically. And Jem's doing 50% of, you know, what she, you know, could do. Like she could bang out twice as much because we've just put it onto him. And it's not in a negative way. Like
it's a reward.
It's a reward. He's dominating now. Like he can do his job so much faster than where he started. You know what I mean? And now it's all about refining that. You know what I mean? So now, like, because you go through stages where you get him to do a job and he does it perfectly and then he tries to do it faster and it goes down a level. So then you've got to bring up the skills to match the speed. And so now we're doing skills and speed at the same time. And as I said before, if you respect the person that's training you, you stay in a system, you come out the other end. You know what I mean?
And then you go to the next place.
Exactly.
And then you can step up.
And their reputation is your reputation. Yeah. Like, we're sending him to the next place and he'll have the best knife skills. He'll do fish beautifully. You know what I mean? He'll make all his pastas and all this other stuff by hand because we don't have any money to buy equipment. And people will want to work with him, for him, you know, and hire him in the future. And that is a representation of myself and more Jem, really. You know what I mean? Because of the way we train him and we take great pride in that, you know what I mean? And they basically are a piece of clay and you mold them and, you know, you mold them in the model that you want. And if he works with us for another 12 months, then he can go and take a sous chef job anywhere he wants, or he can stay and be our sous chef. You know what I mean? We probably don't have any more to teach him in 12 months.
Well, I mean, you've only got 1 month anyway.
Yeah.
We'll have something else. But, you know, he can make toast at my house, and if he makes it perfectly, he gets the Vegemite to the corners, and he makes my tea nice, and he'll move up to making my Nutella toast.
Have we bored you enough yet, Lev?
No, I'm looking for the next email we should read out. So thanks to Miffy for writing that article, providing us with an entire episode's worth of content.
Sorry to the public that had to listen to us while we're on.
Go check it out on goodfood.com.au. We've got two emails this week. I'll do the short one first, then we'll go into a longer one. This one comes from Nelson. He says, "Hey cunts, long time listener, your podcast is unreal. I'm heading to the Barossa in December with some mates and we're all pretty clueless about wines. Just wanted a few recommendations on wineries to check out."
Don't go to the Barossa, go to Adelaide Hills.
Tom Shobrook's not in Adelaide Hills directly Basker range, but I don't think he's in Barossa. To be honest, off the top of my head, I know there is some stuff in Barossa that's good.
Yeah.
But you know, What was that guy's name?
Nelson.
Yeah, talk to Google, you dick.
Like, seriously, fuck, man. No, but is it trusting Google for process stuff? I don't know.
Well, you can't type in organic natural wine.
Okay, well, that's the tip.
Oh, so you learn how to use Google and then use it and don't ask Levs for technology because apparently iPhone earphones don't mean intelligent techno talk.
Fucking hell.
No, but no, really,
I don't know. I don't know the Barossa off the top of my head.
We just know chefy things. There's definitely great wine in Adelaide, whether it's the Barossa, and I don't want to say... I know McLaren Vale's got great stuff and right, you know, all this other sort of stuff. But
write to Joel from Drinks.
Yeah.
Or go on the Drinks website and look up what's from Barossa and then see if they have a winery in Barossa Valley.
Internet. It's a powerful tool.
Yeah, but we're just letting you know how to use it more powerfully. Fucking hell. Like, that is key, a small podcast. Words. So this is a longer one, and God help you, Stefan, for having multiple questions that might can insult you. Stefan says that he loves the podcast. He's been listening to heaps lately. Good for him. You touched on a couple of things last week, a couple of weeks ago, that I try and explore somewhat in my own podcast, The Quicksand Food Connection. You may be interested.
What are we plugging random people's food podcast?
This is relevant to what Mike loves about food and relevant to an episode that we spoke about in the past. As a quick background, I started a podcast last year to supplement the independent regional cookbooks that I publish, so people who buy the books can listen to the podcasts of regional chefs and producers who contribute to the books. I also wanted to give a little bit of shine to the producers who rarely get an opportunity to tell their story long form. I'm super new to podcasting and basically have zero time to make a good one, as publishing takes up a huge percentage of my time. I know that drama. It's really hard to do a good podcast, but who gives a shit? Just put it out anyway.
Yeah,
you guys haven't done one.
We haven't done one yet. Yeah.
You talked in your Donkey Sauce episode about going rural and talking to livestock producers about connecting to food and its origin. You might find a couple of podcasts I've done with farmers relevant and may want to talk to the producers, Redleaf Farm in Fitzroy Hills in the Southern Highlands.
Good produce.
They raise Berkshire pork, among other things, and it's run by Katrina Spark. She is really passionate about this subject, a great person to talk to. Have a look here if you like. Another great person on this subject is Vince Heffernan, who runs Biodynamic Lamb out near Goulburn, New South Wales. In the episode, Mitch mentioned Norm, who gets his spuds off. We did a podcast with him too. What a bloody legend. Yeah. Anyways, I thought as you entertain the idea of going rural and talking to some producers, I thought you might find a couple of chats I've had interesting. So you can find all of those at quicksandfood.com. And he's got some questions off the back of that too. But
yeah, that sounds really good. I love all those producers. I know those farms and, you know, I don't know about the name, but the podcast sounds cool.
Yeah. Check it out, quicksandfood.com. Thanks so much to Stefan for passing that on. Anyways, I thought as you entertain the idea of going... Oh, sorry, I read a part. Never do a good podcast, Stefan, never. Now an annoying question from someone trying to make a podcast. Can you recommend a setup to use to record high-quality audio for podcasting? At the moment, all I've got is a decent USB mic and a lappy, and we sit around a table, but it's pretty shit audio sometimes. So, all right, this is my field. I'll be very quick. Don't use USB mics. They suck. Get a Zoom recorder, either one with two inputs, or the one we use is a Zoom H6, which has six inputs, which means you can make an absolute fucking mess with six chefs if you would like to one day. But, you can criticize our podcast all you want, but it always sounds really good, and it's because we use this recorder. And then I just use, like, you can get Shure microphones anywhere between like the $60 and $120 range. Don't go more than that. There's no need. And then just get some really cheap pop filters to put on top so you don't go and you probably didn't even hear that then because the pop filters are doing their job. So that's my recording advice. And then edit using like either the free GarageBand program. But don't use USB mics. If you don't want to spend money, use the voice memo app on your phone, which actually sounds better than your USB mic. So there you go.
Finally, Levs was useful.
Finally.
That's it. That could have been done in an email.
Also, you may have already covered this, but a mate came home with a box of Ritz the other day, and they were pretty bloody good. Does Mitch have an opinion on the Ritz versus Jats debate? This recent Ritz box is a bit of an eye-opener.
Fuck Ritz.
Fuck Ritz.
I like Ritz.
I
like Ritz.
So if you do like, because Mitch does like,
I BYO when I go to Acme.
Jats a la certain restaurants. What's the most recent one?
Miss G's at the moment.
Miss G's. What's on that?
It's like a banh mi Jats.
Oh, sick. That's mad. You should do Jats a la Pinbone, and it's just a Jats with a Ritz on top.
No, we did Jats a la Pinbone already.
Yeah, so when we were talking, we were going to do a Jats off, and we were all going to bring one. Remember, we were talking about all bringing our own Jats to the podcast.
That's right. Yeah.
So I was going to do try to go like all Heston and do like six textures of Jats. It was so good.
Jats moose, Jats air.
We did it. It was so
Jats,
funny. We
made Ritz, clicks.
It was only Jats, and right. It was like there was a jelly, there was like a foam. It was all this gross shit that tasted like Jats.
Why didn't you put that up?
No one else did it. I was like, oh, fuck it. You know,
no, but you did a fucking toast at least.
It was so good. Oh, we made a Jats granita. Like,
that's disgusting.
That's amazing.
I know, it was the worst. It was so bad. It was the worst.
I wish I had taken a photo.
Oh, mate, it was funny. I was like, this is going to fucking rock. This is so good. Textures of Jats.
So there you go. Ritz are not as good as Jats. Like, you like Ritz, but you don't like them as much as Jats, right?
Well, to be honest, I'd rather hear more about his farms than his fucking choice in biscuits. But Ritz are good.
Well, you heard
Ritz
about his farms already. Come
on. I want to hear more.
Go listen to his podcast. Ritz he just told you how you can go and listen to more.
I find podcasts so tedious.
Quicksandfood.com. Thanks so much to Stefan for emailing us. And if you would like to email us, like Nelson or Stefan did, you can send an email to themitchinpodcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Also, shout out to all the people stopping me in the street to say they listen to the podcast. Like, oh, in the last like 2 weeks, I've had like 4 different people, not in the industry, just randomly say, yo, hey, Mitch.
Yeah, I don't think many industry people listen to us anymore.
You guys don't talk about food.
No. You just, what do we talk about?
Nothing much, really. No.
We talk about dumb SMH articles.
Yeah, which isn't food.
No. It's not food.
So on that, I'm going to bring food back to the food before. Podcast.
Oh, you got a little segment.
I got a little segment.
Oh,
you
know, great, a mic segment.
Top five. You know, like, I'm going to do like my top 5 dishes that I want to eat, but I can't because I'm a chef. Uh-huh. You know, so it's the things that you can't get to because the restaurants either open on the same days as you. Uh-huh. So they're all on Instagram because, you know, you'll go home, you fuck around on Instagram, you're just sitting there thinking, I want to eat that, I want to eat that. So I thought every time I come on, I'll pick 5 things that I saw in this week.
Top 5 that are alive.
That's it. And someone go and eat them and tag Mitch in it and tell us if they were yes or no. You know what I mean?
Because
I
reckon segment.
They look fucking sick.
What's it called?
Top 5 dead or alive can work. Which you did it. I was just going to do top 5.
Okay.
But this is my Insta pick. So the first one. What's that?
Not very imaginative.
Well, what do you want me to call it?
Something good.
What? You come up with something.
I'll, by the end of the segment, I'll come up with something
and
great.
We'll edit it back in. Yeah.
And it won't be. Whatever Lev's come up with won't be good.
I know. But it'll be kind of funny, maybe. I don't know. So the first one is like a shout out to Sixpenny because they're doing this little spanner crab and clam butter dish, which looks so
that
fucking
looks
good.
Yeah, right? That looks nice.
I haven't had it.
Yeah.
You probably have.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Okay, you
awesome
have,
stuff.
But I haven't. All right. So we're open the same days as Sixpenny, so I don't get to go to Sixpenny.
Yep.
And one of the first things I do when I shut, I'm going to go to Sixpenny. I hope this dish is on, but it might not because it's very seasonal. Next one. This one I'm going to go eat this weekend. It's the cotatella at Fratelli Paradiso.
Yeah,
it looks so
fucking
good
at the
moment.
I've been in it twice in the last week.
We can put these up if you want these photos so people can see them or we can tell.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we'll whack it on the Facebook page.
I've had 2 different versions of that.
Yeah.
What's the picture?
This ridiculous.
Yeah, so the first time I had it, it had just gone on the menu and they sort of like roasted the trevisio.
Yum.
And then like glazed it in balsamic and then had heaps of lemon zest and pecorino or beautiful parmesan over the top of the cotoletta and it was fucking awesome.
So if you know what cotoletta is, it's basically a pork chop crumb. Yeah. So pork schnitzel at Fratelli Paradiso looks fucking
It was sick. Off the chain. And then the second time I had it was this one.
Yeah.
Where the ridiculous chopped up over the top
and
of parmesan.
I love fat, like pork fat so and bitter good. Shit. It's the best. So it's good. Just the best combination.
Yeah,
the Italians
do it
better than anyone. Shout out to Melbourne. There ain't much in Melbourne I want to eat normally. But Embla's doing this chickpea pancake at the moment with globe artichokes. Have you seen
that?
Show
me the photo. Ooh, that looks yummy.
Dope dish, man.
Farinata. What's it called? The chickpea pancake?
Yeah, farinata. Like that, yeah. I don't know if that's exactly what they're doing. Like, I don't want to call it that because they didn't. But it's just like, look, they got a wood fire oven. They're putting this chickpea pancake.
Yeah, I've had some good times at Embla.
Yeah.
Embla, good, man. That's a strong dish. That's something I'd like to eat. So someone eat that, tag us, tell if it's as good or not. We're going down to South Australia. There's only like, you know, our boy Duncan. Check out this awful sausage Dunk's doing at the moment with the lentils.
Holy shit, it looks good.
Yeah, so he's making this sausage, basically an awful sausage, and he's doing lentils on top. And I saw that the other night when I got home and I was like, motherfucker. That was the perfect like after service kind of fuck you dish to see.
The other day I told my son Archie, I'm like, we're going to go out for dinner tonight. You can have anything in the world. What do you want to eat? And he said sausages. And I was like, what the fuck? I don't know where do I go for sausages?
Sausages, that's it.
LPs.
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 Always.
LPs.
Always.
Yep.
Now, I got a couple of little like add-ons because it was only going to be five, but these ones are six.
Is that five already? That was only three, wasn't it?
I think it was
four.
Four.
Okay.
And then I was going to, I've got the fifth, but
yeah.
So these guys almost made the cut. So there's a restaurant that's opened up in Young, which is in like regional New South Wales, right? And it's called Clementine's. And the food looks really like really good. I really can't wait to go there. But their bread program is off the chain. They're doing these sourdoughs, like rise and all this sort of stuff. And they sell them on the weekends as well. So they set up like a little bready kind of vibe. You can go in as a local and buy the bread from the kitchen. And I would love someone to buy the bread from Clementine's. It looks so good. I like fucking proper made bread. And then this one, Mitchie will know this one. Mm-hmm. Have you seen at the moment at Momofuku Sandbar, they're doing a skillet cake?
No, I haven't seen that.
So there's a video of this cake. This is a screen grab of it, right? But it's this skillet cake that comes out. It's all wobbly and like basically just like custody. Oh, man, it looks so good. And when you see it, you're just like, fuck. You know what I mean? I'll find a video. And when you watch it, you're just like, yeah. Well,
have you had the Uncle Tetsu's wobbly cake you can get in Chinatown?
Nah, it's not good. Tetsu's no good.
I think it's just all crap, you know what I mean?
It's definitely this segment
is basically anti what that is, because all those things are just like style over substance, and these things are all substance, you know what I mean? So they might not get the fucking hits of like your freak shakes and all your weird like cronut stuff with Mars bar slice and all that bullshit, but these dishes, when I see these are my anti-establishment food media dishes at the moment. And then the last one I'm going to shout out to a little VIP place. I wanted to pick one from this restaurant, but it was too fucking good. And all the people that listen to the Mitchin in London, can you please go to 40 Maltby at the moment? Because the food looks...
Cool.
40 Maltby.
Right.
Every time I go to London, I go there, but the food at the moment looks fucking phenomenal. They always do the baked ham, which everyone else is copying around the world.
So good.
But they've got this apricot and almond custard tart on at the moment, which just looks fucking ridiculously good. They also had another tart on, and then they got this dish of like chicken with like bacon and broad bean bread sauce, which just looks fucking amazing. Anyway, everything at 40 Morby's good. That's my top five Instagram. We'll put them up. People tag us. Tell us if they're good. Eat them for us because we don't get to.
So you have to supply these to us whenever you film. Just pass them on to me and then I'll bring it up. This segment is called Mike Psyched Like Strike.
And just for anyone that doesn't know, he wrote that down so he can say it properly. He's not that good a lyricist.
I'll say everything that James... Lowe's putting up from Lyle's at the moment. Yep. It looks fucking phenomenal too. And
it was a toss up between my VIP of the week goes to Maltby, but Lyle's was in there.
Yeah.
And Flora in New York City was also one that I was
I also saw something from Sauterne.
Yeah, always good.
I can't remember who was there, but it was like a fucking pigeon and foie pie or something. They looked fucking out of control.
Not a Klumba, they're doing something like that at the moment.
I'm not sure where it was. It might have even been Septime or something.
If it's pigeon season, they'll all be fucking...
Yeah, it might have even been Septime, but I think Sue and Roger are over in France, and there's a couple of people in France that are just fucking going crazy.
Every time I come on, I'm going to do my... What's it, my segment called, Les? And that's where Lev didn't have it written.
I got it. Mike's psyched like strike.
Oh, that was good.
And I'll also
you're
say
psyched and because you like them, but you're on strike. It's I was also going to put pike in there somehow. Like you're piking on eating them. I don't know.
I'm not piking. I want them. If anyone wants to email stuff from 40 Maltby,
email some food.
Yeah. Can we digitally print it? Isn't that
just eat the paper.
I'll say my favorite thing to eat at the moment, and it's a bit of a plug for one of my businesses, is Summer Wolfie's food at Bar Rosé, like the matzo ball soup. And he's probably going to hate that that's the thing that I'm saying, but it's fucking so good, man.
So we've obviously like been all so watching good. That, and I was going to put them in, but I thought, well, I can go there and eat that.
You can go there on a Sunday.
And we're actually going on the weekend.
Yeah.
So I thought better leave that out. Because the same, like some of the stuff that the Dolphin is doing in LPs, but I went to LPs like 2 weeks ago. A couple of weeks ago, I ate fucking everything. Yeah. But there'll be a few lying ones because I want to give those guys love anyway. Yeah, but we always talk about those guys. But I thought,
because you can go to frat literally anytime.
I know, but I haven't been for so fucking long.
I've been twice in the last week.
And that photo actually came up
that's
about
your local,
five
though.
Times in my feed.
Yeah.
And so you can't avoid it. I was like, oh, that's too good.
Like,
so
the last two times I've been, I had exactly the same meal too.
Yeah.
Like every time I go, I have scampi spaghetti.
Yep.
And I think it's the best pasta dish in Sydney. Don't at me. Like, it's fucking next level.
It's timeless.
It's so fucking good. I'm addicted to it. And then I had the ragu with the tagliatelle.
I love it. And then I had
the cotoletta with the salad. Yeah. And it's just like fucking hit the spot every time. And then I get a tiramisu to take away. It's like...
See, food talk's more fun.
Yeah. I know. I wish you did more food talk. I don't know why we don't do it enough. But you should come on. We'll have you on every month. Sound good?
only work back to once a month. Fucking hell.
Well, you know you're always fucking welcome. You never want to fucking weekly. Come.
Yeah.
I know. I'm not as busy anymore now, so I can come all the time.
But it's not. This isn't pasta, but I have a new favorite noodle place in.
Pat's been Instagramming this too.
No, that was my next one. I was going to do all the best Asian, and that was the next one. Yeah. Bring it all next time.
That place called. Because I went.
Pat's been hamming that up too.
I didn't see it. I didn't see it.
Don't tell anyone about that place.
I know. I need to go.
That's the redo.
Where is it?
Yeah, but his geotag was way.
Is it the same place?
Off.
Bianca,
oh,
is
it? No, yeah, it's the same one.
Fuck up. It's so good. No, well, one knows
tell me off air where it is.
It's close to where the thing
is. Dude, it's so empty. Like, yeah, give them business.
Keep fucking.
Fucking give them business.
No, because when did you go there? They're busy enough, mate. They're fine.
Okay, all right. I'm in the middle of the day.
Let's put them in next time. We'll do it properly.
Let us be the three white guys that go first before all the other white people go.
I mean, I'm following. The three white guys are me, Pat Nurse, and the guy who runs the very good Instagram page called like Eat, Drink, Read Main.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is, but he eats a good shit.
So. We've been going there because we're in Chinatown all the time buying stuff.
Yeah. So you went to Biang Biang.
And
we're just calling it out.
I gotta go to Chinatown.
I've stolen off other people's Instagrams. That's fine. On Vixen Street in Chinatown, it's called Biang Biang. They do a handmade noodles. Good. Have you had the one that has? It's like this one here. It's fucking insane. It's sauteed pork. But it's like that's better pulled pork than you'll find anywhere else in Sydney.
It's excellent cuisine. The food is fucking sick and it's cheap as shit. You know, it's like
the chili sauce is off the hook.
The bread, like the noodles,
the pancakey fucking thing that Pat put up.
So you won't see us down there anymore.
Yeah, like
you won't see us anymore because everyone else will be there now. But it is hot. The food is sick. It's so well done. Like it's the kind of shit that should be written about, but instead we talk about Nutella fucking waffle crap and all that shit. But that is pure. And I was going to put them in because I was going to do my favorite little Asian ones next time as well. But
I'm going to give a shout out to the Asian one. I just saw an article on Time Out, the top ramen places in Sydney.
Good? I didn't read it.
I was like, who's this dickhead and what does he fucking think? And his top six were actually... I was like, okay, it was Gumshara, Osan,
Ryo's in there.
Ryo's, So the top six, I was like, yeah, okay. In some order, that's right. But I'll shout out, Osan actually has another one in Potts Point, just up the road, like a couple stores up from Room 10. And the Kyoto soy ramen is so fucking good. And the fact that it's in Potts Point,
it's good for you.
It's so good, man. And it's called Wokka Noodle. It used to be this shitty Wokka Noodle Chinese place. And for some reason, they've kept the same name. And it's still Wokka Noodle. It's a ramen joint. It's called Wokka Noodle.
Well, it's a good name.
Yeah. And people are it's gotten busier. Because people have started to work out, okay, it's now a ramen shop and it's fucking really good. But for so long that you go there and be the only person there. And the other great thing about it is the staff give absolutely zero fucks about your timeline or if you're there or if you want to order or anything. It's really, like, it's really frustrating, but I really respect them for it. And I was really, like, the
business model.
The other week, I was really, really craving it. And I went at like 3:05 and I was like, they're like three, they close at 3 and they open at at 6. And I went at like 3:05 and I was like, can I get a bowl? And he's like, nah.
He's
like, I was like, fuck you, but I also really respect that. So if you're in the eastern suburbs and you're craving a bowl of noodles.
They won't serve you, but you should go there.
Yeah, go there and try.
And smell it from the outside and you'll be like, wow, Kyoto, this is right.
I just can't get past the Kyoto. So it's fucking light and clean and especially like in this cold weather, it's so fucking good.
Unreal. Yeah, well, okay, we'll try and talk about food more on this food podcast. I'm going to Murfuku Serbo for the first time since Paulie took over tomorrow, which I'm very fucking excited about, taking B there for her birthday. And then I've got a final big Sunday brunch at Pinbone this Sunday, which I'm excited about.
Final. They got 5 weeks left. Why is it a final?
Yeah, we got 5 weeks. Oh, shit. So, 13th of August.
I thought it was the 3rd of August.
No, 13th. So, come along if you haven't been, you fuckwits.
Thanks so much for listening to The Mitchie. If you want to catch Mike, you can go to Good Luck Pinbone before August 13. You're open Wednesday through...
Well, the next... So, not tonight, but the next four Wednesdays, we're going to do bookings only. one sitting. We don't normally do Wednesdays. So if you do want to come and you want to get in, because everyone thinks there's a line, oh, just so you know, there's never a fucking line. Eh? It's Kensington. Like, all the reviews wrote lines out the doors and all this sort of shit. Yeah. There's no lines. There's no lines. People mill in and we always get you in. Like, I think we've turned away four people in the entire time we've been open. You know, and the most anyone's ever waited is like 45 minutes or something like that. And that was a weird freak Sunday where 75 people turned up at once. It was once in a whole 26 weeks that we've run. And so the first people had to wait. But it's not Billy Kwong. It's, you know, it's not, there's not queues out the door. Just come along. But if you don't and you want to get in, book for Wednesdays, info at Pinbone, and we'll get your booking. Otherwise, we're open Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, and Sunday lunch. And if you're hospo, come Sunday lunch. It's fun.
Yeah, I'm going to be there this week. You can come and insult me for running a shit podcast.
Yeah.
How much?
The worst.
Three shit podcasts.
No, you got me good. That's a good one. Have you got any of that massive flask of wine that you had at your birthday party on Monday?
How much booze do you have left?
Nothing. Just the red wines.
Speaking about alcoholism in the hospitality industry.
One day a week, that's all. Day a week.
Mate, we had a little party on Pinburn on Monday for my birthday and it was very, very good. Everyone came and they brought big format wines and we got really drunk and I'm really sorry to what we did at the Dolphin after, but it was fun.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online, facebook.com/TheMitchin, or send us an email, themitchinpodcast@gmail.com. You can find Mike online at Pinbone. Mitch is at Instakrill on Instagram or Krillin on the Run on Twitter. He's great at RTing things about himself. You can also find me. I'm confusing you with Hongi. Yeah. Neither of you really. You just fave. You're great. You're good. You're a big supporter on Twitter.
I fave and I RT funny shit or like random NBA stuff that probably only me and Ben Sears get. But
actually, Nelson, who emailed us, said, "Can you please start an NBA and hip hop part podcast?"
Oh yeah, probs. Maybe me and Bensie's.
You got to think about a song, by the way, Mike. Do you want another song? Or you want us to choose one? We've got a bank of songs that we want to put out.
You want to run out? Yeah. I need 1 minute to look one up, but I'll probably have something.
Also, I forgot to put Wild Thoughts at the end of last week, but then only 30 people had downloaded it, so I re-uploaded it. If you're one of the 30 people without it, shouts to Ben for letting me know. Re-download that shit for the full Wild Thoughts experience.
Boost our numbers.
You find me at LevDog, LevDawg, and my other shit podcasts are called Hey Fam and Serious Issues. Mike, are we gonna? What song are we gonna go out with?
No, because you guys will hate this, so I'll do this. Let's do LCD Sound System, New York, I Love You, because they're coming out and I can't wait to see them. And it's somber and quiet and chill, just like me.
Fucking hell. All right, see you next week.
New York, you're safer, and you're wasting my time. Our records all show you were filthy but fine. But they shuttered your stores when you opened the door. The cops who were bored once they'd run out of crime. New York, you're perfect, oh please don't change a thing. Your mild billionaire mayor's now convinced he's a king. And so the boring collect, I mean all disrespect. In the neighborhood bars, I'd once dreamt I would drink. New York, I love you, but you're freaking me out. There's a ton of the twist, but we're fresh out of shout. Like a death in the hall that you hear through your wall. New York, I love you, but you're freaking me out. New York, I love you, but you're bringing me down. New York, I love you, but you're bringing me down. Like a death of the heart. Jesus, where do I start? But you're still the one pool where I'd happily drown.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want truly hydrated skin? Meet Osea's Body Care Breakthrough, Hyaluronic Body Serum. It's clinically proven to increase hydration by 161%. It's lightweight, fast-absorbing, and delivers 24 hours of hydration for silky smooth skin without any sticky afterfeel. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SUMMER.